Imagine trying to build an airplane while you are already 30,000 feet in the air.
Right, just bolting things together mid-flight.
Exactly. You're out on the wing, testing the engine, and meanwhile, there's a full cabin of passengers just sitting there hoping for the best.
It's a terrifying thought.
It really is. But I mean, in the fast-moving, high-stakes world of fintech financial technology, that is essentially what startups have historically been doing with your money.
Yeah, moving fast and breaking things.
Totally. So welcome to the deep dive. Our mission today is to cut through all that intense hype in the fintech space and really explore how regulators are testing the future of money in real time.
It's such a fascinating shift.
It is. And we are pulling from some really great source material today. We've got official documentation and an FAQ issued by SAMA, which is the Saudi Central Bank, along with some really interesting insights from the Gamma blog.
Yeah, and this is just a critical subject for anyone navigating today's markets because, you know, when you look at the fintech landscape, there is this massive tension.
Oh, for sure.
On one side, you have these brilliant disruptive ideas that could fundamentally change how we interact with money. But on the other side, it's incredibly difficult for the market to differentiate between like a shiny idea on a slick pitch deck and a robust financial model that can actually operate securely under real-world pressure.
And I think that's where our airplane analogy comes right back in, because the sources we're looking at today detail this sort of regulatory wind
A
tunnel.
wind tunnel, I like that.
Yeah, it's designed to test those experimental planes on the ground
Yeah.
long before they're allowed to, crash into the open market. And the architect of this wind tunnel is SAMA. They call it the regulatory sandbox.
Right, the sandbox.
So according to the central bank's documentation, this sandbox is a framework that allows companies to test innovative business models or financial services in a live environment. But, and this is a massive catch, everything happens under very predefined limits.
Highly restrictive limits.
Exactly. They specifically restrict the scope of the service, they hard cap the number of beta users, and they put strict ceilings on transaction volumes.
And we really need to underline a golden rule from the documentation right up front because it defines the entire purpose of this system. The sandbox is strictly reserved for solutions that are not covered by any existing regulatory framework.
Wait, really? So meaning if a startup just wants to launch like a standard digital payments app and there's already a perfectly good legal pathway for that.
They can't use the program.
Wow. Okay.
Precisely. If a clear licensing pathway already exists, the regulator will just point the company to the standard application form.
Got it. So no shortcuts.
None. The sandbox is entirely about the unknown. It's designed for unprecedented financial models where the central bank literally does not have a rule book yet. So they need to observe the technology in action to figure out how to regulate it.
Okay, let's unpack this though, because the SAMA document claims this is a highly rigorous environment. But if we play devil's advocate for a second,
Sure, let's do it.
if I am an early stage startup founder, I am absolutely going to use my selection into a central bank program to woo venture capitalists.
Yeah.
I mean, how does the regulator actually stop companies from weaponizing the sandbox status?
Like a PR stunt.
Yeah. Just a clever public relations campaign, because it sounds incredibly easy for a startup to just slap a regulator-approved sticker on their website and use it to mask a hollow product.
It is a totally valid suspicion, especially in tech where, you know, marketing routinely outpaces reality.
All the time.
But the documentation explicitly states that the sandbox is not a public relations vehicle, nor is it a substitute for actual licensing. And SEMA doesn't just like ask companies nicely to not use it as PR.
They enforce it.
They enforce it through those predefined limits we mentioned earlier.
But wait, how does capping a user base actually prevent a PR stunt?
Well, think about the mechanics of a PR-driven tech launch. What's the goal?
To go viral, get massive hype.
Right. Generate massive hype, acquire tens of thousands of users overnight, and show off this huge vanity metric to investors. But in the sandbox, the regulator places a hard physical boundary on your operations.
Oh, I see.
They might say, you know, you are only legally allowed to process transactions for these specific pre-approved 500 beta users, no more.
And a beta user is just a tester, basically.
Yeah, a beta user in this context is a real-world test customer who fully understands they are using an experimental product. So by severely limiting who can use the product and how much money can flow through it, SAMA completely strips away the startup's ability to rely on marketing fluff.
Because there's no fluff to scale.
Exactly. The company is forced to prove the underlying mechanics of her product on a micro scale.
So if a startup is purely relying on hype, the sandbox exposes them because they literally aren't allowed to scale the hype. The central bank is forcing them to prove the math works first.
Exactly. And placing those strict boundaries makes the test trackable and measurable for the regulator, which fundamentally reduces the risk for the wider market.
Because you can't really fake it.
You can't fake operational stability when the central bank is monitoring every single transaction of your 500 test users.
That makes a lot of sense. But if the central bank is enforcing all these strict limits to prevent reckless launches, it brings up an obvious question about the architect's motives. What is SEMA actually getting out of all this administrative headache?
It's a huge undertaking.
It has to be. Building and monitoring a live testing environment for experimental tech requires massive resources.
It does. And the documents highlight two highly practical objectives driving SEMA. The first objective is enabling financial innovation, but within a disciplined framework.
Okay.
They know that traditional regulations are often years behind bleeding-edge technology, so the sandbox paves the way for advanced solutions to exist legally rather than, you know, forcing startups to operate in the shadows or just leave the jurisdiction entirely.
Right. But they aren't just doing this out of the goodness of their hearts to help tech founders. There's a defensive mechanism here too, isn't there?
Absolutely. And that is their second objective: understanding and managing risks early. SEMA isn't just enabling experimentation. They are actively monitoring the technology to analyze potential systemic financial risks or consumer protection issues before a full commercial launch happens.
Systemic financial risk. That's one of those heavy regulatory terms.
Mm-hmm.
For someone listening who might not be deep in the financial weeds, what does a systemic failure actually look like in the real world?
So let's say a fintech startup builds a revolutionary new automated clearing system. And to make it work, they plug their software directly into the APIs of a massive traditional retail bank.
Okay, sounds normal so far.
Right. But if that startup's code has a fatal flaw and accidentally fires off, say, 100,000 erroneous transfer requests per second, it doesn't just crash the startup's little app.
Oh, no. It hits the bank.
It floods the partner bank's servers,
yep,
potentially bringing down the infrastructure that millions of everyday people rely on. That domino effect, where one failure cascades and threatens the broader financial system, that is a systemic risk.
Wow. Okay, so the central bank is basically setting up a quarantine zone.
The quarantine zone, right. Yes.
They want the brilliant innovative ideas, but they know those ideas might be contagious if something goes wrong. Inside the sandbox, you get to see if the idea thrives. But if the code melts down, the infection is totally contained within that 500 user limit.
That is a perfect way to look at it. And the documentation's rules around data handling show just how seriously they take that quarantine.
What do you mean?
The source makes it very clear that during the early pre-authorization phases, startups are forced to use dummy data in isolated development environments.
Wait, what does the transition from dummy data to live data actually entail for the engineers building these products?
Well, dummy data means operating in a purely simulated software environment. The names are fake, the account numbers are fake, the transaction hashes are generated strictly for the test.
That's like Monopoly money.
Essentially, yes. You have a simulated user A sending 100 fake riles to a simulated user B. It never touches a real-world banking API or a real person's life savings.
Right.
The rule is that startups cannot just start playing around with live customer data or plugging into production environments without getting highly specific, appropriate authorization from SEMA first. You have to prove your experimental algorithm works flawlessly on fake money before you are ever allowed to touch real money.
Yan, this dual motive from the regulator, fostering pure innovation while strictly quarantining the risk, it completely changes the environment for startups.
Completely.
Innovation isn't happening in a vacuum anymore, hidden away in a garage until launch day. It's happening under the microscope of the authorities, who understand financial disaster better than anyone. But that strict data rule and the user caps, that naturally creates a massive bottleneck for growth, doesn't it?
They absolutely do, but it's a deliberate bottleneck.
Which brings us to the investor's perspective. Here's where it gets really interesting. If a startup is intentionally bottlenecked by the central bank, how does that impact the people funding these companies?
That's the big question.
Right. If you're listening to this and you evaluate new tech or you invest your own money, what value does this highly controlled environment actually offer you? Now, we need to state something clearly from the sources. The sandbox does not guarantee profits.
Yep.
Furthermore, it does not eliminate investment risk. Nobody should look at a company in a sandbox and assume it's a risk-free bet.
Yeah, it's an ongoing experiment, not a government bailout.
Exactly.
However, the documentation outlines that this framework creates immense tangible value for investors on three specific levels. The first level is reducing what we call the scale before maturity risk.
Oh, we've seen that story play out 1,000 times in the tech world.
So many times.
The startup gets a massive injection of venture capital. They aggressively acquire 1 million users in 3 months, and then their servers completely crash. Or their customer service infrastructure just collapses under the weight.
That is exactly the danger of scaling before your operations are mature. And the sandbox structurally prevents companies from doing that. Because they're legally capped at a certain volume or a tiny user base, they physically cannot scale up their operations until their technological foundation is rock solid. They have to mature before they scale.
Walking before they sprint.
Exactly. Now, the second level of value for investors is that the sandbox measures real operational performance, not theoretical performance.
Meaning what, example?
Well, inside this wind tunnel, success isn't judged on a slick user interface or a viral marketing campaign. It's measured by specific rigorous factors outlined by SAMA: stability, resilience, scalability, and user satisfaction.
But how is SAMA actually measuring something like resilience? I mean, they aren't just taking a tech CEO's word that their app is tough, right?
Far from it. Measuring resilience means the regulator is likely requiring active stress tests. It involves looking at the server architecture and asking the really hard questions.
Like, what happens if things go wrong?
Right. What happens to the platform if a localized internet outage hits your primary data center? Can your database handle an unexpected surge where every single one of your beta users tries to withdraw their funds at the exact same millisecond? The central bank is demanding proof that the system holds together when the pressure spikes.
That is intense. And the third value level for investors ties right into that pressure, I imagine.
It does. Operating under these official controls provides clear signals of discipline and accountability. You just cannot be sloppy with your internal bookkeeping or your cybersecurity protocols when the central bank is actively reviewing your data. It forces operational discipline from day one.
Think about the contrast here, though. For the last 20 years, the traditional Silicon Valley playbook has been defined by blitzscaling.
Oh, yeah. Move fast and break things.
Literally. Investors usually demand that founders grow so fast that they dominate the market before any competitors can catch up, even if the product is broken and regulations are completely ignored.
But SAMA is completely flipping that playbook on its head.
Yeah, the central bank is effectively saying, when you're dealing with people's livelihoods and the macro economy, moving fast and breaking things is not innovative. It's dangerous.
Spot on.
This framework forces a massive shift in how companies are valued. It forces a shift away from valuing empty promises of future disruption and toward valuing trustworthy user experiences and incredibly reliable operations.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it creates a totally different DNA for the startup. But as rigorous as this process is, it's crucial to understand that it is still just a test.
Right. So what does this all mean when the test ends? Eventually, the training wheels have to come off. We've explored the benefits of this wind tunnel for regulators who want safety and for investors who want operational clarity. But what happens when the sandbox period is over? Because we really need to bust the biggest assumption out there. A successful run in the sandbox does not mean a company gets automatic licensing.
No, and that is a harsh reality check for a lot of companies. Completing the test phase is not a golden ticket.
Not at all.
When a startup finishes their sandbox period, they don't just get handed the keys to the financial kingdom. To secure a full permanent commercial license, they must submit a comprehensive formal application, they have to meet a completely new set of specific permanent requirements, and they undergo a strict compliance evaluation based on standard heavy regulatory obligations.
And getting to that point is an absolute grind. The sources note that the typical testing timeframe inside the sandbox lasts anywhere between 6 and 12 months.
That's a long time to be under the microscope.
Right. In the fast-paced tech world, spending half a year to a full year, essentially bottlenecked in a testing phase, feels like an eternity. Doesn't that just kill a startup's momentum?
Well, it absolutely kills reckless momentum, which is the entire point. But it builds sustainable momentum. And that rigorous time frame is exactly why being selected into the sandbox is considered a sign of distinction. And we aren't talking about decorative marketing distinction, but meaningful operational distinction.
What does that distinction actually prove to the market, though?
If a company survives the vetting process to get into the sandbox, it proves three things. First, their solution is genuinely innovative. because if it was a standard copycat app, Sama would have rejected them and sent them to the normal licensing queue.
Okay, that makes sense. And second?
Second, it proves the solution is genuinely testable in a live environment under clear boundaries, rather than requiring some chaotic open market rollout just to see if it works.
Got it. And the third?
And third, it proves the company is actively subjecting itself to measurable operational maturity. Their continued existence in the program is tied directly to those hard metrics of stability and resilience we discussed earlier.
To ground this in a real-world scenario, the sources actually provide a specific example.
Yes, the Gamma blog.
Right. The Gamma blog highlights a company called Usul Gamma, noting they were among the early participants selected into SAMA's regulatory sandbox. The blog presents this selection as a prime example of the system working, claiming that their sandbox status aligns with their vision of delivering a disciplined investment experience where trust is built through a measurable model.
It's a fascinating case study. Their public pitch is essentially that being chosen for this structured testing pathway proves their model is built on regulatory trust rather than just empty promises.
Of course, that is their stated vision as a company. As outside observers analyzing this space, we have to recognize that entering a testing phase isn't the same as passing it.
Very true.
The true test for Usul Gamma, or any startup in this program, will be whether they can maintain that immense discipline once they graduate from the sandbox and actually have to survive in the open market. The sources reiterate that their participation is just a structured testing pathway, not a claim of guaranteed returns.
And this raises an important question about culture. It requires a level of patience and compliance that you do not typically associate with flashy tech startups. Navigating a 6 to 12 month evaluation period under the watchful eye of a central bank is incredibly humbling.
It really is. So what does this all mean for you as a listener?
Yeah.
If you are evaluating a new financial service or looking at a fintech investment and you see a company touting that they are in the sandbox,
yeah,
you should not treat that status as a blank check.
Definitely not.
It means they are doing the hard, disciplined work of testing their airplane in the wind tunnel, but the work is not yet finished. It's an ongoing evaluation, not a final victory.
Well said.
To quickly recap the journey of our deep dive today, we have explored how Sama's regulatory sandbox is fundamentally shifting the fintech landscape. It's actively moving the industry away from wild, uncontrolled product launches and forcing it into a disciplined, measurable framework. By putting strict caps on users and utilizing isolated data environments, the regulator creates a space that balances the desire for pure innovation with the absolute necessity of resilience, security, and user satisfaction.
It's a delicate balance.
It is. It manages to benefit regulators who demand systemic safety while offering investors clear signals of operational discipline, all without offering any false guarantees of success.
As we wrap up, I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over regarding this entire framework.
Let's hear it.
If central banks are now effectively acting as co-pilots during the foundational beta testing stages of these new financial technologies, how might that fundamentally alter the DNA of the next generation of global tech giants?
Oh, wow.
For decades, the companies that changed the world were the ones who ignored the rules and moved the fastest. Will the ultimate disruptors of tomorrow actually be the companies that were the most heavily regulated and deeply disciplined from day one? Something for you to keep an eye on as the future of money takes shape.
That is such a compelling question to leave off on.
Mm-hmm.
If the financial airplanes of tomorrow are built in this kind of rigorous wind tunnel, the markets might just be a lot less turbulent for all of us. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. And as always, keep questioning the world around you.